think this one's mine. Is this one mine? Probably.
Yeah, this one's mine.
Sweet.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to Inner and Outer Reality, in reality and outside. I'm your host, Sean Penalbert, and with us today we have...
Wesley Demery.
Wesley Demery. So, Wesley, what is your meaning of life?
What is my... Well, I'm
or
Christian.
Or what is a meaning of your life?
A meaning? I mean, there's a lot. Ultimately, I mean, I'm Christian, so, you know, pursuing a life in Christ is the most important. But what that means depends on the Christian, I suppose. Mm-hmm. But really, it should mean loving other people.
Yeah. Now, what... I'm not, like, disagreeing with Christianity or anything, but what makes you follow Christianity? What makes you think that, like, this is the path that God has chosen for you?
Well, I mean, it's an experience. Like anything else, you grow into something.
Right? Uh-huh.
So... It's not something I just one day decided, like, this is right.
Yeah,
you know, I kind of...
I see the light.
Yeah. I went from more or less Protestantism, kind of loosely believing and liking the Bible and growing up like that. And, like, my grandma and mom were Protestant. My dad didn't really care. He was like, yeah, church is good. But he never went. He's not a religious guy.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not opposed to it. And then I got kind of tired of it, and I went and explored Buddhism and Hinduism and Taoism.
Mm-hmm.
I went to a Buddhist temple for a while. That was really cool.
I
learned
bet.
A lot. I have a lot of respect for the Buddhists, man.
Yeah.
They're really great people.
I would say that I kind of mostly lean towards Taoism and Buddhism,
yeah.
But with many hints of Christianity, because, I mean, that's what I was raised with, and
yeah,
I kind of know.
It's kind of tied in American culture, you know.
And also,
more or less,
the metaphor of Jesus Christ, like, being, you could be this individual who, like, could change the world and, like, teach people how to love each other.
Definitely.
And do things properly, and literally the universe will still crucify you.
Yeah, it's a way of looking at it. I mean, if you're going to do good, what is that one saying? It's like, no good deed goes unpunished.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like, it goes to show just, like, any of us as characters in the universal story of life, it's just like, it seems that the ones who do good are usually the ones who are sacrificed the most, you know, like...
And they have peace, you know, if someone's doing good, they're not doing it for...
Exactly.
...some material reward, they're so, doing it because they have conviction.
Exactly, and so it's like, even, you shouldn't be afraid to do good because you'll be persecuted... You should do good because, like, that's what changes the world. You know, like, that's what...
Yeah.
That's what...
Deeper meaning than, you know, sitting there and watching TV your whole life.
Exactly. It lives forever, and it makes, like... It literally influences the entire universe. Like,
yeah,
the
yeah,
entire
yeah.
cosmos.
The
I'd say the entire funk.
Yeah, the things we do... I think people more or less, more often... I mean, I'm speaking in general terms, so I'm mm-hmm. saying myself, too... The problem is not that we think too much of ourselves, that we think too little. Like, the things we do matter a lot.
Yeah.
Everything we do, every decision we make has repercussions.
It has.
Sometimes they're huge, like, we don't even know.
Yeah.
But it's really freeing to see it that way, because you realize, well, you have responsibility to do more, right? Because
mm-hmm.
the thing, we have, like, tremendous power to influence the world, right?
Yeah, and more than that, to
yeah.
influence the entire existence. Like,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
every
yeah,
action to decision we're making right now, as a result of being existing, we're influencing the future. Like,
definitely.
No matter where
yeah.
or at any point in time, it's like, we are having an impact on that.
Certainly.
And some people, I guess, just choose, you know, like... It is different for everyone, you know?
Yeah.
Sometimes it's not even a choice for some people. It's like they're set up to kind of fail. Because, like you said, many of us think too little of ourselves.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that, like, in some ways, a lot of our governments and leaders want that to be the option. They want you to be oppressed, you know, because it keeps them in charge.
Yeah. I mean, it's situational. It really just depends on where you're at. I worked for the Census Bureau for a while.
Yeah, I remember.
And just the computers did not work. Like, they kept messing up. Like, this is really a testament to the bureaucracy and incompetence of a lot of branches of government.
Yeah.
So much is buried in bureaucracy that it's hard to believe that it's so powerful.
Yeah.
Other than by its numbers.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's a few people that are really, like, genius and, you know, have a lot of influence. But I think a lot of the power of government, which a lot of government is just us, right? I mean, we're part of what makes up governing a country, right? I mean, more so the people that are actually in power, you know, in Congress and Senate and presidency and all that. But still, a lot of it gets buried in bureaucracy.
Yeah. And the thing that I observe most is, like, and not just within government, but, like, something that I experience personally is, like, often my ambitions move faster than reality allows. And I think that, like, that kind of sets up even more with bureaucracy in the government. It's like all these people have great ambitions and they could literally change the world, you know, and bring us together, but the bureaucraticness of what we have now just like is like, oh no, I don't think that's gonna work. Or they can't even put it into effect until like 5 years later. But then by then it's too late. It's just like
it can be hard. You got a lot of roadblocks.
Yeah. And just like you said, having all these old, outdated systems of just, like, computers and technology, it's like, are they even caring? Like, what are they actually putting into this to, like, make great change, you know? Like, or they would have made these changes already. But, again, it's bureaucratic. All these thoughts go into it. And it's like, oh, how much will that cost us? Oh, that's 5% over our budget. So, no, we're not going to do that. And it's like, if you just spent that little 5%, you'd be changing the world, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's all situational, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Everything just depends on its unique situation, so. Can you think of any, like, concrete examples, though, of when something went over budget? I don't know. I don't really keep up. I don't keep up with news, man. News a lot of the time is, like, really toxic,
I think. Yeah, I agree.
You know, people are just, or the news networks, not people.
Yeah.
News networks are vying for attention, right? That's like the hottest commodity is people's attention.
Yeah.
If you can get viewers and you can get viewership, then you have power to influence, and then you have power to influence, people will spend their energy and time and money on whatever you're trying to get them to.
And then you abuse it, because you have that power.
You can. I mean, it is abused a lot. Not everyone does.
Yeah,
I think
true.
Probably more so people, larger maybe news networks do, but...
Have you seen that edit where, I don't know if it was a guy or a girl, someone edited together a, video of, like, all the news networks saying this, like, one pre-written story of, like, this is dangerous to our society. This is dangerous to our society. Yeah. This is harmful and dangerous. And that was insane.
Yeah, they tell you what they want you to think.
Yeah, exactly.
So I don't follow news. I don't have a Facebook feed anymore. I got rid of it. I got a Google Chrome plugin called News Feed Eradicator. So I don't see my news feed. I just post stuff and I talk to people on Messenger.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I do think that it's still important to, like...
It's good to keep informed. Yeah. I talk to people. I mean, occasionally, like once a month, I'll look something up and be like, all right, what's going on?
Yeah, because I think education is one of the most important parts of activism or even existence. But I do completely agree that, like, the news outlets that we have now aren't meant... they're not designed to educate anymore.
Yeah,
and so it's like you really have to find... it's hard to find, like, sources... to like that are trustworthy and stuff. Like recently though, I've stumbled across after like with all the Black Lives Matter and stuff, I've been getting more into like activism and intersectionality of like how do we, you know, unite people and unite each other and help each other out, you know. And so I've stumbled into this podcast, Pod Save the People and Intersectionality Matters.
All right.
And it's news. Like they're saying the stories that the news is not going to tell you, because they're mostly like black stories and stuff, and they're just shoved under the bus and no one talks about them. And then not only do they talk about the news, but they talk about like what to do. Like, yeah. What can we do together to, like, help each other or, like, solve this problem or figure it out?
Yeah, we shouldn't just be afraid or angry. We should actually be
And the news,
proactive.
Yeah, and the news doesn't do that. They're just like, here's something you should be upset about.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, they don't really give a follow-up. If you want to volunteer, you can check out this. It's
some BS. Or really. Donate to our station.
What was I going to say? A lot. It's also, I think it's impossible to be unbiased completely, you know, because even in the choice of choosing what to report on, you're showing a bias because you're saying this is important more so than this, right? So it's impossible to be completely unbiased. A lot of things are subjective.
Basically everything.
Yeah. I mean, to a point, I don't think everything is. Well, I don't know. We're getting into philosophy, but this is a philosophical podcast. So if you talk about, like, certain things I think are objective realities, like God for me, right, is an objective reality.
Yeah.
Right? I see it as, he's someone that exists. Anything I do will not change that, right? It's not relative. It's objective.
It's objective.
In the same way, like, a chemical reaction will happen if you put two chemicals together. It doesn't matter what you believe about it.
Yeah.
It will still happen.
I get what you mean.
Right? So there's objective realities in, like, physics, right? There's gravity. I drop my phone, it will fall to the ground because of the force of gravity. Or the force of gravity.
And we still don't even understand gravity.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's still tons of stuff we will never understand about physics and reality, but we've understood enough to use some of the things.
Yeah.
You know, science in itself is more of a observing. You know, you're observing the phenomenon of the universe, the phenomena of the universe and Earth, and you're trying to understand it and then use it. You know, that's how we have cell phones
and
all the awesome technology we have, because people have discovered things.
So back to God. As a Christian yourself, you call God he. What do you think of as God? Like, what do you think God is, you know, like, or what is your definition of God, you know?
It's a good question. I don't want to speak, like, for the church, but I want to speak for my understanding of it is, God is love, but he's not just love, right? People say God is love, right? God is love. Because that's in the New Testament. But God is also a lot more than that, right? Yeah. On some level, he's beyond our understanding. I mean, I'm Christian, so I believe in the Holy Trinity, right? Father, Son, Holy Spirit. And we call him he, right? Because Christ was a man. We call him the Father because life came from him, right? Life proceeds from the man originally, right? And the woman gives birth. So the originator, right, is man, right? If you think about human life, that's where it comes from. But the woman is needed, right? And together they forge a human being. It's beautiful, you know? So God doesn't actually have a gender, right? Like, we have genders.
That's why I would think of God as a they.
Yeah. So, we call him he because he's the originator, right? That's my understanding.
Yeah.
And it's always been that way. There's no reason to really change it, I think. It would be unnecessary. But we also call him he because Christ, right? Christ, the Son of God, he's God also, is a man. So, we call him he because he was a man. Simple as that.
So, I was raised Methodist, and I was, like, pretty into it in, like, sixth grade and everything. It's basically the, let's believe in God and let's have fun while we do it kind of church.
Yeah, like, whatever method you have. That's the understanding I have, right? It's, like, your method of finding God and worshiping him works more or less.
Yeah.
Right? We like, accepted that.
And then in, like, high school and college and such, I kind of fell out, and I was, like, leaning more towards things, and I wasn't really, like, as much of a believer. I was still more agnostic, you know, like, believing that there was, that we're here, and so that there's some meaning. But now that I'm, like, researching my theory of the funk and everything, which I don't know how much you know about that,
Alex mentioned it very briefly.
It really has me believing more in the idea or example of God than ever before. Because now I'm almost scientifically finding out what God would be made of. Or what we're made out of, you know, in God's image or anything. And so, like, I believe that my idea of the funk is what everyone is trying to describe as God or as Allah or anything. You know, they're all basically the same thing. We're just... It's semantics.
Yeah.
We all believe that it's our own personal perspective or different word or something like that, but we're all kind of talking about the same thing, this experience. Yeah. And so we're here right now. They say that, like, the Big Bang happened approximately 13.8 billion years ago, but still that the Big Bang or anything that happened that brought us here exists within something. Like, if my fist is existence, it's still within this reality, right?
Yeah.
And so this reality is kind of the God, or God is outside of it, and it's ever expanding, and that's what I would call the funk. And so if this is existence, and this is anything else, like anything and everything else, like this is existence and non-existence, and this is something that, like, we can't even perceive, it's still within that same bubble, right? And that's the funk, and it's anything that's within it and itself, it's always going to expand, and it's always expanding, because, like, we're just in that experience, and now that we're here, we are basically teaching it what it is like to be us within this experience.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we, like we talked about, we have immaculate influence on everything.
Yeah,
and so I would argue that in a way that we are God himself or themself. But now we aren't to the level of omniscience and omnipresence that the idea of God is, or Allah or anything.
Yeah. But so you're saying, like, we influence him, right?
Yes. Yeah. And vice versa. It's a paradoxical thing. And so, again, going back to, like, it's been 13.8 billion years that created you and I right here in this moment. And so if we amplify that across the entire cosmos, or observable cosmos and beyond, if we amplify that by, you know, another 13.8 billion years, or even 13.8 quadrillion years, or even further, who's to say that, like, at anywhere within the entire cosmos, all of that experience doesn't just become, you know, God, for example, and then God recreates itself in some ways, you know. And again, that's just theoretical. But I think that it's starting to examine more the idea of, like, what could God be for all of us, and, like, or how to universally connect all religions and all people through, like, science and observation and stuff. Because, I mean, as we experience existence, we learn more and more and more. And if we, like, and I understand traditions and stuff, but, like, you can't let some things halt you from education, because it's
you should definitely always be growing and learning. I
think that's what God wants you to do.
Oh yeah, definitely, we should be growing always.
Yeah,
definitely.
And so I think it's a part of, like, educating each other and, like, getting these ideas out there, because, like, I mean, who the people who wrote the Bible, like the disciples and stuff, they did that for a reason and purpose, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
And then the people who wrote the Quran, they did the same thing. And we all have these moments in our lives, the everything that we do, even if you're not one of the disciples, you are having extreme significance working through reality. Reality
is, definitely. Certainly, yeah, everything we do matters. I mean, also in Christianity, they have, you know, Christ died for us, right?
Yeah.
But he died for you and me, like individuals, right? It's not for everyone, but it is for everyone, but it's also for every single human being. Like, I remember someone saying, if only one person needed to be saved, Christ still would have came to save that person, right? Because he has love
because of that
for
type
humanity,
of love.
Right?
Yeah. And I would even argue outside of that. Like, I think that what I observe in many religions is how humans are basically putting themselves, or what is the word?
Manifesting?
No, when you're basically they're projecting humanity onto God. And so,
that happens all the time. C.S. Lewis writes about that.
And that's, again, why I asked you about, like, we think of God as, or many people think of God as he, because they're projecting humanity onto this more an idea, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's why I think that now that we're getting more information about gender and gender, the spectrum of gender and stuff, if God is a, you know, a, an existing thing, it's not going to be anywhere near human, or it's not going to have a sex and stuff, you know. It's
I mean, we have to understand him in a way from what we know, you know, like you're saying. But yeah, he's way beyond, like, anything. I mean, even if we understand, you know, 0.1% who God is, right, we'll never understand it all, but there's an experience there. There's, like, a relationship, and you're growing into that and with God. And also, I was thinking about identity, right? Like, who we are is constantly changing. You know, who you are today is not, we're always in a state of growth. So who I am right now is not at all who I was, you know, 3 years ago. Yeah. There's parts of that still in me, right? But I've grown. So you can't, like, because life and people are dynamic, you can't nail down exactly who someone is.
At any
because
moment.
We're all, always in a state of growth, which makes things exciting.
Yeah.
Because it shouldn't be stagnant. We shouldn't, life is not static. Things being static is mostly, like, unrealistic, right? We want it, we're comfortable with things being static, but we're always in a state of change.
Yeah. Entropy is inevitable. And entropy is
entropy.
It is basically like things decaying into chaos. Yeah. But as inevitable as entropy is, there's also entaxy, which is the opposite of entropy, is things like coming from chaos into order.
More into order.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. I've never heard of that.
And it really is that whole yin and yang. Like, reality really is that this delicate balance of just, like, things being able to happen and things not being able to happen. But I still think, I postulate that, like, it's even beyond that. Because, I mean, we've only experienced so little of the entire universe and cosmos, and only here on Earth.
Yeah.
And it's like, our experiences are completely different than the experiences of, like, if there's literally any other living life forms in the cosmos. And I would say that there very likely is, you know, like, one of my favorite quotes from Neil deGrasse Tyson is basically like, if you think there's no other life forms in the universe, that's basically like taking a cup and dipping it into a fish tank and being like, there's no whales in this cup, so whales don't exist, you know?
Yeah, I mean, we have no idea. The things that could exist in an entire cosmos, who knows?
Yeah, and and again, it's super possible that, like, again, with human projection, humans try to project themselves into the unknown.
Yeah.
And so it's like, almost every sci-fi movie or anything, all the aliens are very humanoid. You know, they walk on 2 feet, you know, the upright, blah, blah, blah. But I would think that aliens, you know, could look like an amorphous blob that, like, just hovers, you
who
know?
Knows?
Or it could even be a gas.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
like like we could be surrounded by, like, what if oxygen is an alien? You know,
and
we're influenced by it because it gives us life and everything. Yeah. And even further than that, like, because we know, like, atoms, like, we know particles. Everything is made of, like, some sort of particle, and that's the farthest we know. But particles are even made of something. And it all comes down to, like, some sort of field of vibration, you know? And I think that, again, you keep diving down, and then you get into, like, literally the basics of, like, I think you start dissecting.
Yeah, there's, like, atoms and then quarks.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll never understand it all entirely, but it is
fascinating. I can't say never.
Yeah,
I mean, like, with technology,
will.
Like.
Maybe we will.
We're finding more and more. Almost yearly, whereas, like, scientific advancements back in the past, like, would be like every 20, 30 years or so.
It's exponential.
Yeah.
But every field of science, well, it usually grows exponentially, and then it reaches, like, a plateau point.
Yeah.
To where we can't really go much further until there's some major breakthrough.
Yeah.
Right? Like, with speed, we hit the sound barrier. Like, you can't go much faster than that. Right.
That we know of yet.
That we know of. But that stuff's still being discovered and learned about. Like, I've heard talked about talking about Einstein again, like quantum entanglement. You ever learned about that?
Yeah.
Spooky action at a distance.
That's
the basis for quantum computing, and that stuff is fascinating.
Yeah, it's crazy. And
way different than modern computing. But my understanding, it has to be like really cold, like almost absolute zero. And it has to be really sanitary, or else any little thing could just mess with it.
Yeah, even a gravitational
disrupt,
field.
Disrupt the quantum computing.
And the closer we get to these things, it really is, it just seems like it's like we're getting so close to like replicating reality.
Yeah.
So it's like, who's to say that we are not a replication ourselves?
We'll
like,
be in the Matrix soon, baby.
Yeah. Who's to say
that Matrix state?
Who's to say that we're not in a Matrix right now, and that we're inventing another Matrix to go even deeper? And then like the process repeats itself.
Yeah.
And,
see, I never liked the idea of the Matrix is a cool movie, but as a philosophical idea, even from a teenager, I thought it was dumb because it brought like a aspect of meaninglessness. It's like, okay, if I'm living in a matrix and a matrix and a matrix, whatever, who's to say the things I do matter, right?
But they do. They still do.
But yeah, they still can. I mean, definitely. But that's the way I thought of it. I was like, no, I'm going to bar that idea and be like, that might be true,
and
but
I think,
I'm going to make the assumption that it's not.
I think people do apply that to like life. They're like, oh, okay, like if I'm in a simulation, or if anything was in a simulation, then it's pointless. But it's not, because like even if you were in a simulation, or even if like you were some sort of like computer-controlled robot or something like that, every action and decision that you are doing as this simulacrum has impact on your surroundings. And, and like, let's say that you are a sim. Like, let's say you're a sim in the game The Sims. Everything that you do has effect on your environment in that game, but also the person playing that game. You're affecting that person, and also the effect that you have on that person has effect on their, you know, simulation. And then that simulation has effect on, let's say there's one above that, you know, like, it just keeps going out, you know. And so it doesn't matter how small or insignificant you think you are having immaculate influence on everything.
What you do matters.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. What we do matters. If anything's taken from this podcast, take that.
Yeah.
What you do matters.
What you do matters. So be present. Like, and even if your presence is just sitting there, you know, like, and taking this in, that is being present. Like, that is so important to just, like, even if you're, like, overwhelmed, you know, like, it is important to just be there with yourself.
Be attentive to the moment.
Yeah. Because, again, you're having this significant impact on reality. And, like, if that moment, like, you need to, like, sit there for 5 minutes and, like, think, that could impact, like, you know, 30 minutes down the line. It's like, because you waited 5 minutes, suddenly, like, you leave the house and you run into someone you haven't seen, you know? Like,
yeah, yeah.
And definitely. If you hadn't, like, sat there in peace, you know, for 5 minutes, you wouldn't have run into them or something like that.
It's true, yeah.
And I think moments like that happen to us all the time, every day. And that's what I would call the funk providing, or God's love, essentially. Yeah. And
some guidance from a force above us.
Exactly.
Right.
It's just like a... Have you ever been, like, thinking of someone and suddenly they called you?
Definitely.
You get the feeling like, I shouldn't leave the house today or something like that. It's these gut feelings, which I call funk feelings. And I think that we are getting closer and closer on learning how to communicate with those feelings and teach each other these feelings and how to communicate with literally reality.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, that is, I think, communicating with God on one level, right, is listening to, like, your conscience, listening to those more guttural, primal feelings of, okay, something doesn't feel right, you know, and or intuition, like, I think those are sometimes like guidance from God, right? And even if they aren't directly, there's still, if God created us, there are things in us.
It's indirect.
That will, provide the guidance we need to do things that are helpful and beneficial for ourselves and others. Yeah.
And so what I've been trying to communicate in my writings of the funk is the relata of everything, and literally how...
Relata?
Relations.
Ah, got it.
How everything is related. And, like, literally, like, schizoanalytically, basically, like, psychoanalysis is the study of the mind. And schizoanalysis is the study of the environment that makes that mind possible. So, like, we are literally shaped by our entire environments. Everything that you have been around is why you are who you are today.
Definitely. Yeah.
And so, I believe that the funk is providing these experiences and guiding you on this path that you are meant to be on. And so, like, literally, like, the music that you listen to or the things that you see every day, the people you talk to, this moment right here, us talking right now, was meant to happen. And the funk guided us here into these moments. Like, there was purpose and reason why I reached out to you, you know? Like, it's beyond me. But in the end, I made that choice, you know? But at the same time, it was kind of inevitable. Like, I think that, like, this, what I would call the significance field. So, like, there's magnetic fields and gravitational fields. I think that there is also a significance field within all of reality. Like, and it, you know, it's just like time and space. It's something that we can't imagine or perceive, but it's there and it's affecting all of us.
Definitely.
And literally, like, I think Earth is within, you know, like, a huge significance field, because literally there's trillions of life. Like, we all have our own significance. And other planets just don't have as big of a significance field.
It's another thing pointing to what you do matters.
Yeah, exactly.
definitely, yeah. One thing I had thought of when you were talking about being present, I did, like, prison ministry for a little while.
Whoa.
For, like, a year. That was a lot of fun. I'd like to go back and do that.
I bet that's life-changing.
Yeah, it was awesome. I went and visited this guy. His name's Brian. He's out now, actually. And I was, like, a mentor, like, air quotes. But I was really just his friend. I came in and, like, talked to him once a week.
And that's so healthy. That's how you rehabilitate prisoners.
Yeah, it was... I mean, he had been there since he was, like, 19. And I never found out exactly what he did. I didn't really care. I was like, it's not my business. Yeah. If you want to tell me, you can. But I don't really care. I'm just here to talk to you and hang out.
To treat you like a person.
Yeah, and it was fun. Like, he taught me about music. And then he got out, and I got to drive him to the reentry center.
What's a reentry center?
So it's he goes and receives, like, his documents, and they process his paperwork to go back into the world.
Right? Oh, okay.
So I got to drive him. It was the first time he had been, like, free.
Wow.
He was 40, so...
Oh, my gosh.
Most of his life, from 19 to 40.
21 years?
21 years,
I think. Is that the math?
Yeah, 21 years, and... it was awesome. He's like, man, things look a lot the same, but now it just seems like everyone's on their phones while they're driving. No one's actually paying attention. But the point I was going to make was Ministry of Presence, like the assistant director, Father Stephen was his name. He gave this talk about, like, Ministry of Presence. Like, it's not always what we say that matters, but it's being present with another person, right? Like, visiting someone in the hospital, visiting someone in prison. Like, it's not the fact that you're giving them the best advice or that you're saying the right things. It's the fact that you took your time and energy to show up and be present with another human being out of love.
I completely agree.
So that's really important. And there's so much emphasis, I feel like, on saying the right things, but speaking is only so much of our communication, right?
It feeds into, like, so many people are afraid to fail or that they'll make the wrong decision. They'll say the wrong thing, and so they won't be present.
Yeah.
But...
how do you learn if you don't fail?
That, right there. You will always fail, and then that's how you succeed, is you have to fail first.
Definitely. I mean, if you're afraid to fail, you'd never make this podcast.
You know? Yeah, exactly. Like, and you have to reconsider what failure and success is. And it seems modern society really thinks success is about fame and fortune. And that's not success. Like, personally, like, I feel extremely successful because, like, if I look back at the last 9 years of my life and everything, and here comes a humble brag, I guess, like, I've done so much. Like, I've done 60 books of draw book. I have 70 albums. I have, like, the Art of Ceilings. I have these podcasts. I feel successful.
Yeah.
And so it's like, I have not made a lot of money off of these things. Like, I spent thousands of dollars on all these projects, and I've only made, like, with Who to Thunk, I've made, like, $600 in royalties so far.
Yeah, but how much fun did you have,
exactly.
And how much did you share? Like, this is fun to do this right now.
Yeah, and this lasts forever. This is having some sort of impact on reality, you know?
Yeah.
And it is subjective whether it is good or bad, you know? Like, it's not for me to decide on that.
Yeah.
The world will decide those things. But if you're afraid to, like, go do, then, like, no one will. Nothing will happen. Like, things will happen, but, like, not to the same degree. And, again, like, even if you choose to not do, you're still, like, you've still made a choice. Like,
yeah.
And that choice, like...
It's like the Rush song.
Yeah, exactly.
If you choose not to decide, you still have made a choice. I will choose free will.
And so, would you rather, like... And again, another subjective question. It's like, personally, do you... Would you rather not have anything? Like, would you rather be a person, an individual, who lives their life... And doesn't leave anything behind for, like... Because, I mean, you can't take it with you when you die. So they say.
Definitely.
And so it's like... you with technology and with the connection and availability of the Earth at this point, we can become immortal as ideas.
Yeah.
And so it's like... And it's all you have to do is do. You have to just go out and be present.
Yeah.
And just do whatever is calling to you, you know? And again, like you said, it's like... there's you're going to mess up or you're going to say the wrong thing... But at least you were there for it. And that's how you expand off of it. And so we need all of those things. We need both good and bad. Something I, a philosophical thought I've had is like, suffering is important.
Definitely.
Like,
it's inevitable and it's important.
Exactly. You can't have joy without suffering in a way.
Definitely.
Because, like, if you don't know what it's like to suffer, then you don't know what it's like to not suffer.
Yeah. Your joy won't be as deep if it's conditional.
Yeah. The sad part is that the majority of life is suffering. But, like, we have the power to, like, change these things.
Yeah.
It's just that, like...
I think there's two types of suffering. I don't know. I've come to the conclusion that there's the kind that's avoidable that we cause by our own misactions or misdeeds, you know?
Yeah.
If we decide to eat, like, 3 McDoubles or, like, 3 Whoppers in one sitting, probably going to have a stomach ache.
Yeah.
If we do it again, we're still going to have that. We're not really learning from that. It's unnecessary, avoidable suffering.
Yeah.
And then there's the suffering that is unavoidable
that
we should accept. If we're going to grow, and we can learn and grow from that, just like a plant grows, you know, a plant has the wind and everything that makes it grow its roots. So you could call, like, all the elements affecting plants. This is about outside too. We have tons of plants here.
And feeding into.
So that. The suffering is the environment around us causing us to grow, right?
Yeah.
So we and should even, utilize it, learn from it.
Even the early stage of a plant. Plants have to suffer through, like, if you don't break through your shell.
Break through the seed. Yeah.
Exactly. Like, you can't grow if you don't break through that barrier.
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely.
Having one of those moments of just sitting here in life.
Yeah, being present. It's a beautiful day.
It really is. Man, what next? How do you think we can, like, help each other? Like, what is your advice to, like, love each other more?
Well, pray, first of all. Always pray.
But
also subjective. I mean, to me, it means one thing, but to a lot of people. Actually, when I brought that notebook one time, we were at Chris Croft's house, I don't know if you remember him, and I asked, like, what is prayer to you? Do you pray? If so, what for? And the simplest one that I liked the most, someone wrote, do you pray? They said, yes. And they said, what is prayer to you? They said, help.
Hmm.
What do you pray for? Help. So it's like reaching out for something greater because you need assistance from somewhere else, right?
And
but also just being present and conscious of helping out, like... Be conscious, choose to help someone consciously. Like,
yeah.
Okay, I am deliberately going to call someone. I'm deliberately going to write a note. And it doesn't have to be a huge thing you do for someone. It can be like ministry of presence. Just be there with someone.
Yeah.
And our thoughts matter, too. Even, like, good thoughts about someone will resonate and have an effect on the universe, right, to help and love others. Think loving thoughts.
Yeah.
Those help, too.
Because I think where it comes into play is prayer is kind of essentially, like, a process of thoughts. Like, you're manifesting, like, what you would like to see happening or what you, either you or someone else might need. And so then you're influencing the universe in those thoughts. Mm-hmm. And then the next step is action. And so, like, you do what, now that you've prayed and you've considered these things, your mind or God is, you know, telling you these thoughts, you know, through the environment and yourself to what can I do now? Like,
yeah.
And it's either be patient or, you know, take action or do something. It feeds into each other. And again,
definitely,
you will fail and you will succeed.
Keep moving forward.
Yeah, always. It's the only way to go. And, I mean, even within, like, just to tangent off time travel, it's like the idea of going backwards in time, you are still going forwards in time. There is no going backwards.
Yeah. Because you're still progressing.
Exactly.
In some way.
It's impossible to go backwards in time. Because...
go ahead. Finish
that.
I was going to go on this tangent earlier. I don't know if we have time.
Yeah.
But it was about creation, right? So I started studying theology when I came to the Orthodox Church. And one thing that I had never thought about in Protestantism or in Buddhism even was that time is part of creation. So, like, God's the creator, right? If we understood God as the creator, he also created time. Time is part of creation,
yeah.
Right? So he's outside of that, like, not bound by it. So the way he sees us is not the way we see each other.
Yeah.
Right?
It's instantaneous.
Yeah, and it's like...
omniscient.
Yeah, and then that gets into the debate of free will, which I definitely believe in free will. I mean,
I think it goes both ways.
We choose. Our environment, I mean, affects us, but we always make a choice. Like, you ever read Viktor Frankl?
No, but I know the name.
Oh, man, I'll have to get you the book. I love that. It's called Man's Search for Meaning. It's about he calls it logotherapy. Because he was a psychologist, I guess. And he talked about, he was in, like, the prison camps in Nazi Germany, right? For 4 years, I think. Almost everyone he knew died. He lost everything. And he was, like, overwhelmingly positive human being. But he talks about the last of the human freedoms. He got, like, thrown in a room naked and, like, there's nothing there. And he realized that he did not have to hate the people doing it to him. He didn't have to be angry. He could choose his response to any given scenario.
Yeah.
So there's all other choices removed. There's always the choice on how to respond to any given moment or situation.
Yeah. And I argue that it's both. So fatalism and predeterminism. I think is
true. Certain thing. I mean, we didn't choose to be born.
Yeah, exactly. And so, like, these things are already happened. And just as Einstein proved, time is relative. And so we are existing within the future already. Like, the future is already happening. We are just experiencing the past building up to that moment. We are the past moving through the present as we become the future. And so, just like that example of the guy being in the prison, he was directed there, right? Like, life led him up to this moment. And then when he was in the moment, and when you're in literally any Planck moment, like the smallest measurement of time or anything, when at every Planck second, you are making a decision that was that your predeterminism has led you up to, and now you're in a Schrodinger's equation.
Yeah.
Like, you're literally within a superposition of you will choose any moment, and any and every moment will happen. But you only experience the one that is chosen.
Yeah.
And it's literally that for every Planck second. So, like, it's happening a trillion, billion times every second of your life.
Yeah.
We're in these levels of choice and predeterminism. And so I think that, like, the reality that we're in, he was meant to teach both of us right now that love. Of, like, you can choose that. And now we're spreading it to the next person. Whoever's listening to this podcast, that information is now spreading to that. And all of this happened in that predeterminism but also within our choice. Like, we're choosing to, you know, contribute to it.
Yeah.
And so it breaks off into this multiverse, but this is our surreality, like our section of multiverse. And it's crazy. And that's why I think that, like, or I postulate that we are each within our own realities. Like, you, like, literally, like...
And they clash with one another.
Yeah, we're in our each reality, and it's all one greater surreality. Yeah. And they're all just clashing at every single moment.
Encounters.
And not just us, but literally every particle that creates us is also within their own reality.
Oh, yeah.
And so it goes even further. And so, like, literally, like, and it goes further than that, you know, whatever those atoms are made out of.
It's all part of this big, beautiful thing we exist in.
This great funk. And the way that the funk was described to me, like, in all my meditations and all my research and stuff, like, it is both good and bad. And you feel it. You feel funk in both ways, good ways and bad ways. Like, when you hear that song that's just like, bom, bom, and you, like, nod your head and you're feeling it all over your body, you're like, oh my gosh, I feel this. And then there's those bad funks where you're just, like, depressed or sad and you're just in a funk. And so it's this, like, it's this all. And it's subjective and objective,
because they're in a funk or getting funky.
Yeah. And it exceeds humanity. Like, it goes out, because I think that, like, even creatures and animals and objects experience funk, because, I mean, they are within this experience, in this reality.
Yeah. Everything's interconnected. Everything,
they're just not human. And
I'm still part of all this, though.
Exactly, yeah. Because as science proves, energy never is destroyed.
Yeah.
It only transfers. And so it's my postulations that, like, literally all of this experience, we are all, again, we're all the funk. We're all just individually our own separate units, experiencing itself and teaching itself how to experience itself. And so you are me and I am you, and we are your house and the grass and everything. Like, we're literally these particles. We're just seeing each other through each other's eyes. Like,
we're all made of very similar things on a molecular level.
Yes.
Definitely.
We're all made of the same molecular stuff, essentially. Like, we're all made of funk. And so I think we're getting closer and closer to tapping into that potential reality of being able to experience, just like I said, the visual microphone. Like, one day, like, let's say 3 billion years in the future, either humans or any other life form is able to go back into a core of a particle and take out information that happened, you know, years and years ago.
Yeah.
Who's to say that, like, you can't...
Vibration signature.
Yeah, exactly. Who's to say they can't listen to a radio episode of, like, a 1950s show, you know, like, from a little tiny particle that they just fished out of the air, you know,
it's
or the entire human universe.
Archived within this quark.
Yeah, it's archived at some point within the funk somehow.
Yeah.
And those vibrations, or that field of significance, is just expanding forever. And, you know, and so, like, it's evolution at its, like, at a deeper core than life. And so it really is mind-blowing. And
it's mind-blowing,
We're getting closer and closer all the time to just, like, new theories and thoughts. And it is, again, it's both psychoanalytical and schizoanalytical, and, like, our environments are shaping us on how to amplify each other and the funk itself.
Yeah.
But that is, I love that story of, I mean, like, you're stripped down from your humanity and, like, you're thrown in a pit to, like, be tortured or anything. And it's like, you can either hate these people or you can just, like, be forgiving, you know, and, like, the experience is going to suck overall, but, like, it is how you interpret it, you know, it's how you take it in. It's like,
it's miserable, but you can grow from it. I mean, that's utilizing suffering. Yeah. I mean, even if you don't, like, you grew from it during the time you were alive, it helps shape you into who you become.
And, a thing that I like to, talk about is, people are like, oh, once you're dead, like, that's it. It's like, you don't have any more influence. And it's like, it's not true, because, like, when you die, basically everything that your whole life was, you become everything that you influenced. Mm. So, like, let's say I were to die tomorrow, right, or you were to die tomorrow, we have become each other in this moment. Like, now you or I live on in each other because we're gone. And not just us, but, like, literally everything that we've been around. We live on in these, like, the chairs that we're sitting in, and, like, our parents, you know, or our animals and dogs. I lost my tangent of thought where I was going with that. But kind of that is, like,
it's not just limited to this
life. And then not just that, but, like, your body. Even though that your consciousness is gone and you're no longer being active and as big as an influence, you're still influencing everything around you. Like, whether you were cremated or they put you in the ground, you're still having an effect on everything around you. And eventually, that will entropy, like the Earth or planet Earth will entropy into nothing and chaos, you know. And then matter will break down into where, like, in X amount of time, like almost infinity, like the whole universe will possibly, like, break down again over time until there's one little thing of energy, and then that energy will entropy into the next Big Bang, because, like, it's so much energy that it's like once it gets down to a molecular point, it explodes, you know, like a supernova. And so theoretically, that's why, like, they think our Big Bang wasn't the first one, you know, and that, like, it just leads to the next one. And so, like, and then if you, like, take, if you remove time, you know, it's basically all these, like, just flashes, you know, like, hundreds of billions and trillions of years are just going by like this. Like, every time I do this, I'm, that's reality. Like, it's crazy. And we can't even perceive these things yet. I think we're on the way. Like, again, the more that we educate each other, and the more we talk about these things and have these discussions, we open up our own minds.
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah, this was pretty enjoyable. I had one other thing I had thought of. It was from, like, about time again. It's from the C.S. Lewis book called The Screwtape Letters. Really awesome book. It's like this uncle demon, right, writing to his nephew who graduated, like, Tempter's University in hell, right? It's a really cool book. And he's writing letters about how he's failing and needs to do better. But he talks about time in one of them. I could pull up the quote, but I'll just paraphrase it from memory. He talks about how God wants us to live in the present moment because the present is most like eternity. Right? He's like, well, the past is frozen.
Yeah.
Right?
The future's not established.
The future is not yet. And it, it talks about how most of the, like, the sins point to, toward the future, right? You're trying to get something that will never be satisfied, like lust or, like gluttony or some, like, earthly ambition. Mm-hmm. You know, you're trying to always get more and more money and success, but there'll never be, like, a climax.
Right? Yeah. There is no real finish.
Yeah, there's no finish, right? So, but in the present moment, you can experience love. You can experience, like, life, and it's the only moment we're ever actually in.
Yeah,
is you're the present always moment. In the present. Yeah, we're always in the present moment. Like, I learned about that in Buddhism, right? The mindfulness, having to really connect with, like, well, this moment, be mindful of right now. But yeah, that's where God wants us to live in, is the present, because that's the moment we're in. That's the moment we're really influencing things. So we shouldn't get too stuck on the past. We shouldn't be too worried and fearful of the future. We should be here now. Yeah. Right?
There's a quote by Chuck Klosterman that I wrote down the other day.
Sounds cool. Maybe I'll use it as my mass quote. Do I send those to you? I need to start
sending them out. You used to. But nostalgia. Like, if you're living in the past, nostalgia suggests that you're mentally projecting a belief that life was better in the past, regardless of evidence. And if you dislike nostalgia, it means that you believe that the same projection is an interpretive lie and the world is constantly improving, even if it feels significantly worse. And so, again, that's like living in the past or the future. They're both kind of harmful. Just live in the present and, like, let the past and future happen, you know, and, like, don't focus too much on, like, the mistakes you made, you know, or anything. Just grow from them. You
can't change them.
Yeah.
But you can change yourself right now.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Wesley, thank you for being on.
Yeah, it was my pleasure. It's a lot of fun.
And thank y'all for listening. See you next time.
Adios.